Michael's eyes. Every man who lived on Huroglans knew the stories, and there wasn't a man here, or woman for that matter, who didn't revere old Selig. Reminded that Selig had taken pride in Hurog's refuge status, they would all be on my side, whether my uncle agreed or not, and he knew it. Landislaw was not going to leave with his slave. Poor Landislaw. Durok frowned heavily at me. Gentlemen, give me some time to talk with Ward. Should be locked up, said Landislaw. My uncle raised his voice. I'm sure that you and your men are very tired. I'll station a few of the Blue Guard at the sewer tunnel and let you and your men rest. You'll feel better after a good meal and some sleep. Ward, you need to change out of your riding gear. I'll be up in a moment to discuss some business that has come up since you've left this morning. Oreg screamed suddenly, and I couldn't help flinching. Garanon stiffened an odd, listening look on his face.
What was that?
What? Asked Durok.
That sound. Like someone dying.
His voice trailed off when he realized no one else was reacting.
Ghost, I said casually. I'll go clean up now.
I bowed to everyone in general and bounced up the stairs in character. As soon as everyone cleared out, I planned to go back and check on Oreg. Axiel waited for me in my rooms. Mutely, he helped me disrobe and wash up. He didn't even comment about the new set of Oreg-sewn clothes lying on my bed ready for me to wear to dinner. I'd have to talk to Oreg about that. I didn't mind Axiel knowing about the family ghost, but it wouldn't do to have him the topic of common gossip. My bedroom door opened just as Axiel was tightening the lacing on my left arm. The right was already done.
If I could speak to you for a moment alone, asked my uncle.
I nodded. Axiel finished the lacing and bowed his head shortly.
I'll be in my quarters if you need me.
Durog waited until the valet left before he began pacing back and forth.
Out of the mouths of children, and his voice trailed off before he added, idiots. Where did you get your sense of right and wrong, Ward? Not from Fenn, I vow. Much as I loved him, he was a chip off our father, and Da would have laughed himself to butter if someone reminded him that Hurog was supposed to be a refuge.
I stood where I was, moving my head with his pacing, something that looked particularly idiotic. I stopped when I remembered that I was going to tell my uncle the truth. He halted, mid-stride, as if it had only been my head movements that had powered his steps.
I came up here to argue with you. If word of this gets out, we'll be a target for every runaway slave in the Five Kingdoms. We'll be laughed at in the king's court. But that wouldn't matter to you, would it?
He didn't sound like he wanted an answer, so I didn't answer him directly.
In Hurog, there are no slaves.
He sighed, but it sounded almost like a sigh of relief. He stared past me, speaking as if to himself. There are no slaves at Hurog. The ancient law written into our charter by the first High King states when any slave sets foot here, they are free men from that time forth. That my father and his father chose to forget it makes it nonetheless true. Landislaw and Garanon will just have to take their chances with Cyrnak. Selig's word still holds true in Hurog.
Garanon's all right, I said. Landislaw can rot.
Durog frowned.
You don't like him. Why not?
This was my chance to tell him that I was smarter than he knew, but my tongue was never swift, and in the end, I just shrugged. I'd wait until Garanon was gone.
If you had liked him, would you have declared the slave free? Asked my uncle.
I frowned at him. It was a good question. Was most of my decision based on spite? Would I have remembered the ancient laws if Landislaw hadn't been in the middle of it? I thought of Oreg mourning in the Great Hall and the chained dragon somewhere below the keep. Too many Hurogs had forgotten their laws over the centuries.
There are no slaves at Hurog, I said.
My uncle gave me an odd smile and half bowed in a gesture of respect. Indeed, he shut the door behind him. The only slave who remained in Hurog said,
Ward, you won't turn her in?
I turned to see Oreg standing before the panel in my wall that had opened into the passages. The cuts and marks were gone, and he seemed lucid again, though he hugged himself and shifted from one foot to the other anxiously. I wished suddenly that I knew how to free him, too. Perhaps I'd talk to one of the king's sorcerers next time I was at court, though I wasn't sure I wanted anyone else to know our secrets. I doubted that even one of the king's wizards could unlock an enchantment that would last so many years. Everyone knew that mages were more powerful in the age of the Empire. I won't turn her in, I said. Aurig raised his chin.
Really?
Really. I hoped the firmness in my voice was enough to convince him. You've seen that she has bedding and food?
Yes, he whispered. But she's still scared. I put her in the cave with the dragon bones.
In a softer voice, he said,
She hasn't seen me. I just put warm things and food in the cave. I should have told you this morning.
You've sealed her in the cave? I asked. She's been there all day.
He nodded.
I'll go talk to her, I said. She should be all right in the keep, even if Garanon and Landislaw haven't left yet. Or she can wait there if she likes, and you have no objections. Aurig had come to me for help. Yesterday, Pansy had wickered when I came up to his paddock. Miracles do happen. Aurig stared at me uncertainly, looking as young as my brother had that last day. Sometimes I could forget what Aurig was, but not after the scene in the great room a few minutes ago. He'd come for help, but he didn't quite trust me enough to take it. She will be safe, I assured him. Though he didn't move, the panel behind him slid open. He turned on his heel and walked through. I followed, and the panel slid shut behind me. This time the passage was very short into the dragon cave, as if it were merely adjacent to my room instead of deep in the heart of Hurog. As I crossed into the cavern, I noticed two things. The first was a strange, thrumming noise inside, and the second was the magic filling the cavern like thick soup fills a pot. I could see faint glows twinkling among the rocks, and the back of my neck kept telling me that there were things watching from the shadows. When I stopped, Aurig turned back to me and said, She's trying to work magic, but she isn't strong enough to break my protection of the bones here in Hurog. We hadn't been quiet coming in, but she didn't seem aware of us as we maneuvered through the rubble to the sandy area where the dragon bones lay. She sat in front of the skull. Her hair hung in matted, filthy clumps halfway down her back. She was so dirty it was hard to tell much more about her, even in the light provided by the dwarven stones. The thrumming sound I'd heard was her singing, though it sounded like no music I'd ever heard. I was watching her so closely it took me a moment to notice that the chains were off the skeleton. I thought about doing it myself, but had come to the conclusion that it was too much like hiding my family's guilt. A dragon's remains being found deep in Hurog would not be surprising. Having it bound made our culpability clear to any who saw it, so I'd left it as it was. Welcome, fair traveler, to Hurog's hearth. I gave her the traditional greeting, making her status as my guest real, whether she realized it or not. She must have been absorbed in her spells, because at my words she jumped to her feet like a startled rabbit and her voice choked off. Before I could say anything further, she made a throwing gesture with her right hand and a flaming, crackling something launched itself from her hand with blinding speed. Then it stopped several lengths in front of us and winked out.
Peace, little sister, crooned Aurig. I'm sorry I had to leave you here, but I had to know what the Hurog mutant intended before I knew what I could do for you. She lifted her chin. I'm not your sister. Her voice shook, disguising everything about her accent except that she had one. Why did you come to Hurog? I asked peaceably. I thought Hurog was supposed to be a place of refuge where dragons and slaves are safe. The others laughed at me. Then I came here and found they were right.
She gestured toward the dragon's chains that lay near her. I decided she was probably from Avonhell, though Islander's accent was much thicker. The Avonhell folk were given to slavery, so that would make sense, but something about her didn't ring true. She didn't sound as subservient as she should if she were a slave. You are safe here, I said earnestly. You may stay at Hurog if you wish. It might be wiser to stay down here until Garanon and Landislaw are gone, but that is up to you.
Who are you to say this? She asked scornfully after staring at the two of us a moment. The both of you are little more than children.
The effect was ruined when her voice broke. Lines of weariness gathered about her mouth and eyes. Garanon and Landislaw had looked tired, but they'd been on horseback. She'd been, I'd looked down and muffled an exclamation.
She'd been barefoot.
Aurig, I said, ignoring her earlier question.
See her feet?
He looked down. I'll get a pail of water and some of Penrod's witch hazel brew from the stables, he said and vanished. The woman's eyes widened, and she sat down abruptly.
Who are you?
This time there was no accusation in her voice. Ward, I said companionably.
My father, Fenwick of Hurug, died a few weeks ago, so I am Hurug Meaton, though my uncle rules Hurug until I am 21.
And he?
She asked, gesturing vaguely at where Orig had been standing.
Oh, Orig. I thought about what I could tell her. He's a friend.
He's a wizard, she said, almost to herself.
Well, I confided, deep in my role as idiot, because that was how I always dealt with people. I really don't think he's a wizard. We have a wizard here, but he doesn't look at all like Orig.
Wizards don't all look alike, she said in surprise.
Uncle Durog's wizard and father's wizard look alike, I protested.
That's because they're brothers, Ward, murmured Orig gently, returning from his errands.
I blinked at him for a moment. It was easier than usual to look stupid. I wasn't used to him popping in and out in front of me. Oh, right, I'd forgotten that. I motioned her to a broken slab of rock that was just a little low to be comfortable. I'm pretty good at this, I said, taking the bucket from Orig and setting it on the ground at a comfortable distance in front of her. The brat used to cut up her feet all the time because she didn't like wearing women's slippers. Got her some good woodsman's boots. Mother didn't like them, but she didn't have to doctor the brat's feet either.
By the time I finished speaking, she looked calmer. I took the pottery bottle holding Penrod's brew and uncorked it. I poured a fair portion into the bucket. Cautiously, she put her feet into the bucket, hissing when the disinfectant touched the cuts. I dipped the clean vegetable brush Orig handed me into the bucket and pulled out a foot. She'd done some damage. The whole bottom of her foot was raw and embedded with dirt, knowing that there was nothing I could do to lessen the pain of scrubbing. I set about doing it well once, so I wouldn't have to do it again. When I was satisfied I've gotten all the grit and filth out of that foot, I set it back in the water and picked up the other one. All in all, she was a strange slave, I thought. For one thing, she demonstrated she was mage-born when she'd thrown magic at us, although I suppose a mage could be made a slave, I'd never heard of one. For another, tired as she must be, she had none of the dull helplessness I'd seen in all the slaves I'd ever met.
What will your uncle do when he knows I'm here? She asked tightly.
He already knows, I replied, frowning. There was some infection starting on this foot already.
My lord, said Orig, his face going distant, your uncle is looking for you. Supper is ready.
Can you finish here? I asked.
He nodded, his eyes still unfocused.
If you hurry, you can meet him in your rooms.
Garanon and Landislaw were seated on either side of my mother, across from my uncle and the brat, while I sat at the head of the table. Garanon was his usual smooth self, but Landislaw was grim and silent.
So, said Durok, what is the news from court? I haven't been there since Winterfair.
Garanon set down the bite he had been going to eat and said, King Jacobin is worried about Vorsag still. Vorsag lay just to the south of the Five Kingdoms, along Ornstone's southernmost border. The new ruler, Carriarn, is said to be unstable, and there's some question as to whether he will hold to his father's treaties.
There was some question as to whether Carriarn's father would hold to the treaties, replied my uncle. I've met Carriarn. I'd say there's no question at all about him. He'll hold to them as long as it suits him and not a moment more. I've heard that there have been Vorsagian border raids in Ornstone.
Garanon nodded.
I've sent most of my men back to my lands with my armsmaster.
But your estate is more than 6 leagues from Vorsag, said Durag, his voice tautening from relaxed conversation to honest interest. If there are bandits that far in, why is the king sending troops?
King Jacobin accepts Carriarn's claims that it's a few lone bandit clans increasing their activity, or even Ornstonians doing the raiding themselves. I'd never heard Garanon utter a word against the High King, but there was a bitter edge to his voice. Jacobin won't declare war over a few bandit raids.
War? I asked, trying to sound eager, the way an idiot who was good at fighting would say.
Garanon shrugged. The king won't go to war over Ornstone unless the Vorsag decide to start taking land rather than riches and lives. He said it with casual ease, and I wondered if I'd imagined the earlier bitterness. He was Ornstonian, but he'd been the king's lover for 15 years. I turned my outward attention to my food. War would mean leaving Hurog in the hands of someone, while Durok, I, and the Blue Guard traveled all the way across the Five Kingdoms to Warrenstone. With the threat of bad harvest, it wouldn't do Hurog any good at all, except there would be fewer mouths to feed.
Like my uncle, I'd met the Vorsagian king Cariarn at court. He was one of those men who was not particularly blessed in feature or form, but left you believing he was. He had been decked with bone charms and followed about by a handful of mages. The official word was that he was a mage himself, but I thought not. His attitude about magic was wrong for a wizard, reverently obsessive, when the wizards I knew reveled in it.
"Don't you, Ward?" asked Landislaw. I looked up. "What? I was thinking."
He smiled. "Your uncle was just telling us about your father's horse. Said it was a killer. But you had it following you around like a lady's puppy."
"Well, easy to get a horse to follow you," I said cheerfully. "Another matter to ride him. Had me off 3 times this week."
"Hmm," said Landislaw neutrally. "I was observing to your uncle that you collect misfits like the stallion. You did it at court. Remember that gawky girl last year, Garanon? Even look at your sister, though a woman who can't speak is not a bad thing. And now you're trying to add my slave."
Durok and Garanon smiled politely. The brat looked nervous and tried to be invisible in her seat. Mother looked up and said in the rambling, dreamy way she had this late in the day,
"But of course he does. If he weren't the heir, he'd have been sent to apprentice with mages, but his father wouldn't hear of it. The High King Jacobin himself commanded Fenn to do it. We don't have nearly enough mages anymore. But before Fenn could send him, there was that terrible accident. And then Ward wasn't at all suitable for learning magic."
She turned back to her meal. Landislaw frowned at her.
"What does that have to do with Ward strays?"
Mother chewed daintily and swallowed, then washed her food down with a small sip of wine.
"He's a finder, like the ones in the stories. He finds lost things, and they find him."
Her pupils were pinpoints, though the hall was only dimly lit by oilcloth-covered skylights. I wondered which of the herbs in her garden she'd been eating. Dream root didn't affect the pupils. I'd almost expected her to get better after Father died, but she seemed instead to lose herself in the role of grieving widow. The woman who'd made my blocks move around the room was gone for good.
"I don't think it works that way, Lady Hurog," objected my uncle. "If he were still a finder, and Fenn told me that his abilities disappeared when..."
He glanced at me, but I chewed unworriedly and rather loudly on a raw carrot.
"When he was hurt. If he were still a finder, he would find things. They wouldn't find him."
"Yes, dear," said Mother, just as she had said to Father. "I'm sure you're right."
I coughed, feeling sorry for my uncle. It's hard to argue with someone who slides away from your point like wet oatmeal slides around a spoon. Garanon looked particularly uncomfortable, and it occurred to me that eating at a table with Mother and me would not be a treat. I finished the last bit of bread on my wooden trencher and got up. Durok looked at me and frowned, trying to remind me that it was rude for the host to leave while people were still eating. But I thought I'd let Durok explain that Hurog was going to hold Landislaw's slave without me.
"Pansy," I said, "he needs some carrots."
I showed everyone the ones I'd stolen from the table. The brat grabbed the remnants of her bread and jumped up after me.
"All right," I said before my uncle could say something about her manners. "You can come. Stay out of the way. If Pansy hurts you, it will make him feel bad."
Chapter 4, Wardwick. Running is an act of cowardice. Not that cowardice is necessarily bad, as my aunt used to say, moderation in all things. After I was through with Pansy, Ciara followed me back to my room and manipulated me into a game of thieves and kings. The contest depended purely upon chance, and she was always confoundedly lucky, or else she knew how to cheat. Orig watched from his perch on his favorite stool, snickered or rolled his eyes at me as she trounced me. Orig never hid from Ciara unless there was someone else present.
"To bed," I said sternly when she'd beaten me yet again.
She laughed, kissed me on the cheek, and danced out of the room. I waited until the door shut firmly behind her before I turned to Orig.
"How's our fugitive?"
He smiled lazily at me.
"Sleeping. She'll stay underground until the other two leave. She doesn't like Landislaw much."
"Nor do I," I admitted freely. "I'll be happy when they're gone from here."
Someone knocked politely at my door.
"I'll just check on our sleeping guest and leave you to deal with Garanon," Orig said and disappeared. His stool stayed on 2 legs for a moment before falling to the floor with a loud clatter.
I hadn't changed for bed yet, so I didn't even have to slow for my robes when I answered the knock. Garanon stood just outside the door.
Hello? I said with an easy grin, holding the door back so he could come in.
He took the door out of my hand and closed it behind him. He stepped close to me and said,
I need your help, Ward.
I blinked at him stupidly.
He needed my help?
I found this in my brother's pack tonight, he said, taking a bundled cloth from his belt pouch.
I wondered if you had seen anything like it before.
As I bent down to get a closer look, he lifted the cloth and blew the gray-green powder it had contained into my face. Before I fell, I saw him step back and cover his nose. I awoke and dreamed that I was 12 again and couldn't move. People shuffled about me, but I couldn't make sense of what they were saying. I screamed and howled in gibbering fear, but not even a whisper broke through my lips. Finally, the outside noises quieted, and for a moment, I thought it was because my ears had quit working too. Then Oreg's voice broke through the fog surrounding me.
I had to wait until they left, Ward, he said urgently. Don't be angry with me, please don't be. I'll break you free of it, it's all right.
As the bonds of the magic Garanon used broke, I rolled to my knees with a gasp.
Oh, gods,
I pleaded involuntarily, tears rolling down my face.
Shh, Oreg whispered, patting me anxiously on the hand.
He kept his body angled away from me, afraid that I was going to hit him for not rescuing me sooner. His fear and my ability to move again brought me to myself.
It's fine, I said. Thank you.
My voice sounded as hoarse as if I had screamed. I wiped my face with shaking hands and realized I was on my own bed. I struggled to think. Why had Garanon imprisoned me in a spell and then left me in my room? Oreg's head came up.
They're coming back. What do you want me to do?
Nothing, I said. Not unless I ask you.
I could hear voices outside now. My uncle was very angry.
Don't let them see you.
I stretched back out on the bed and closed my eyes.
Not so stiff,
warned Oreg, so I relaxed as well as I could hear the door opened.
My dear sir, said Garanon in a bored voice, Ward is unfit to hold Hurog.
To ensure for his proper care, he is to be delivered to the royal asylum in Estien, as his father requested. I've shown you the king's writ. You don't even have to worry about the usual charges for the service. Knowing the state of Hurog's wealth, I have donated the fee myself.
My father had intended to imprison me in the king's asylum?
That was 5 years ago, argued my uncle. Fenwick feared the damage to Ward was more extensive than it was.
The Hurogmeeton just didn't want to pay the fees, corrected Garanon dryly, which I have done. The only thing you can affect now is who holds Hurog. If you help me recover the slave, I will see that you are named Lord in Ward's place.
My uncle inhaled deeply in surprise or excitement, and there was a long pause.
What was taking him so long to accept? Here was his opportunity to have Hurog with no blame to himself.
Garanon's voice grew slick and sweet. The king will listen to me on such a matter, especially since Ward's younger brother has been missing for over 2 years. Long enough to presume him dead.
You tie my hands, said my uncle.
You tied your own hands when you allowed the boy to make all the decisions, replied Garanon calmly. When we found out the girl was headed here, I thought we might need this.
I know your nephew from the court. He recites ballads about Selig by the hour to anyone who will listen.
Only to the people who really annoyed me, I thought.
I knew he would hold to the old ways. He is too innocent to be negotiated out of it, unlike you and me.
A hand came down and rested briefly on my forehead, my uncle's hand.
Do you torture puppies too? He murmured.
To protect my brother, I would.
Garanon's voice was hard.
I will speak to King Jacobin, Durag's tone held warning. I am not without influence.
I couldn't see it without opening my eyes, but I heard Garanon's smile in his voice.
He will not reconsider. I will have that slave.
Not if Oreg had anything to say about it, I thought. Unless they took Hurog apart stone by stone, she would be safe.
My lord Durag, continued Garanon, think of it this way. How long would Hurog survive with an idiot to run it?
From the sound of my uncle's voice as he replied, I knew he was pacing.
And what if I don't want Hurog? Look at it. It's just an old keep, smaller than my own. The only reason it's still standing is sheer Shavig stubbornness. It's too far north to do much more than to feed itself. This year it's not even going to do that. The old mines are played out and have been for generations. He was trying to convince himself, but I heard in his voice the same soul-deep hunger I had for Hirog. I wondered if Garanon noticed.
Poor! What about the dwarves' treasure? I've heard there was gold, gems, and magical amulets, said Landislaw.
I hadn't known he was there until he spoke. I couldn't tell if he was serious or if he was just making one of his idle, cutting comments. Or both. There have been people searching for treasure since before my grandfather was born, my uncle snapped impatiently. If there ever was such a thing, it is long gone.
Hurog could revert to the High King, said Garanon. His interests leave him with large debts to cover. If someone,
threat added an edge to his voice,
suggested that he hold Hurog in trust,
he might sell off the horses and anything else of value and leave Hurog to rot. If you help capture my brother's slave, I'll see to it that Hurog is yours. Silence filled the air.
To hold in trust for my missing nephew Tostin, said my uncle, finally giving in. You may have the slave as soon as we get her out.
I thought you might be reasonable, Durag, but you'll forgive me if I post my own guard on Ward's door.
In the morning, a delegation of my men will escort Ward to the asylum. Landislaw and I will stay here until you collect his slave.
As you wish, my uncle agreed. I heard his footfall approach my bed. He touched my forehead again and left the room without speaking another word.
We might have trouble with him, observed Garanon.
No, Landislaw disagreed. The boy will do well enough in the king's asylum with all the other noble embarrassments Jacobin collects there.
Durag knows it. His position will hardly change at all. Hurog will be better for it.
And so will I.
You will keep your promise to me, asked Garanon. You will stay away from Cirnak's gambling halls?
Of course, answered Landislaw, of course.
Garanon set a guard on the inside of the door and left with his brother, alone, except for the shufflings of Garanon's man. I examined my options. Under no circumstances would I allow myself to be incarcerated in the king's asylum. Father had taken me to see the poor folk who lived there once, possibly to inspect the fate he decided upon for me. The visit had filled me with sympathy for the empty-eyed occupants of the barred rooms. But I knew I wasn't going to see the inside of the asylum. Garanon didn't know what he'd face getting me out of Hurog. Orog was my secret weapon, but I expect my aunt would have no trouble stopping him either. She wasn't one to worry about possible political consequences of her actions, and the Blue Guard outnumbered Garanon's men. But cold fear still coursed through my heart. My father had found a way to keep Hurog from me after all. Hurog earth was in my bones, and its magic ran through my blood. When I wasn't at Hurog, there was an emptiness inside of me that nothing else could fill. Without it, I was nothing. Stalla could drive out Garanon, but the High King would not ignore treason. Eventually, Hurog would fall, destroyed by me. I'd have to leave, and it was my own fault. Garanon was clever. Otherwise, he would not have survived the war that his father had begun. An Arryn-stone noble of middle rank, when merely a boy, he had taken down more powerful men than my uncle. He knew how the game was played. Within his realm of corruption in the rougher areas of the royal city of Estien, Black Cirnak was as powerful as King Jacobin. So Garanon had gone after the weaker opponent, me, the idiot. If I'd told my uncle the truth the day my father died, the whole of Shavig and most of the Five Kingdoms would have known there was nothing wrong with me, and Garanon would not have asked the king for the writ. So the loss of Hurog was my fault. But first I would escape. Then I would kick myself for being as stupid as I pretended. After that, I'd find some way to win Hurog back. My decisions made, I dozed lightly for a while until the guard's breathing lapsed into the slow patterns of sleep, and I cautiously opened my eyes. But I had to shut them again when someone knocked at the door.
Who is it? Grumped the guard. I have food and drink for you, sir.
It was Axiel. Axiel didn't carry food. He was the Hurog Meaton's body servant. Serving maids carried food.
The guard opened the door, and I heard Axiel step in the room and cross to the table near the fireplace. The guard shut the door, and I heard nothing more. No footsteps, no voices, nothing. Until Axiel spoke beside my bed.
Well now, he said. What did they do to you, boy?
I felt a sudden sympathy for Oreg and Pansy. How much could I trust my father's man?
A spell, I said, sitting up.
I dropped the character of Ward the Stupid, a matter of subtle change in enunciation and facial expression, as I continued.
It's just hard to make a spell stick to a Hurog meeting in Hurog.
He stared at me a moment, and I took the opportunity to glance behind him at the crumpled form of Garanon's guard, lying bound and gagged on the floor. I knew Axiel was good, but to accomplish so much without me hearing it was better than good. I tried a smile.
I think that I'd better leave unless you can think of a way for me to oppose Garanon's writ incarcerating me without bringing the king's forces down upon Hurog.
The corner of his mouth turned up suddenly.
Can you define incarceration for me, Ward? Or is your intellect too deficient?
Guilty as charged, I said.
He laughed once quietly.
I've watched it practice with Stala, and wondered how a stupid man could fight the way you do. I should have realized you weren't as stupid as you pretended. His face grew serious. We'd best go. When Stala heard you'd been taken, she started gathering supplies at the stables and sent me here.
There are some others who will have to come with us, I said, having already thought through my escape that far.
Ciara can't stay. She's turning into a pretty girl, and there are too many men who look at her as defenseless because she can't cry out. Can't tell anyone what was done to her.
And you won't be around to scare them,
agreed Axiel.
I have Ciara and Bastia, the ex-slave, waiting to leave, said Oreg from the other side of the room.
Axiel had his sword drawn and was halfway to Oreg before he'd finished speaking, leading me to conclude that Oreg had decided for whatever reasons to show himself.
Hold, Axiel, I said, keeping my voice down in case someone was walking in the hall outside my door.
Axiel stopped but didn't sheath his sword.
Axiel, this is my, I hesitated, cousin.
Thanks to my father and grandfather, there were a lot of Hurog cousins around. He's a wizard, and the reason Garanon's spell didn't stick. Oreg, this is my man Axiel. Oreg already knew him, of course, but I didn't want to advertise it. Oreg bowed with old-fashioned formality. Axiel nodded in return, sheathing his steel. I didn't want to give him too much time to think until I figured out a better way to explain Oreg. Oreg, is there passage to the stables? There are guards in the hall.
Of course, he said.
He turned to the nearest wall, not the panel he'd used before, and pressed the stone as if there were some mechanical lever behind it. A section of the wall slid back soundlessly, answering, I hoped, any questions Axiel had about how Oreg had come to my room, even if the answer was incorrect. The passage Oreg led us down had stairs, dwarven stones, and dust, just like a real secret passageway would. Maybe it was. When we came to a place where the narrow corridor branched, Oreg stopped.
It will be faster if I take Axiel to get the horses and you get the others, he said. They're in the cave.
Right, I said. Axiel, we can meet where the two boulders stick up like rabbit ears on the trail to Tyr Fenning.
He nodded. With Stala's help, there would be little problem getting the horses out of the gates. I started down the left-hand way, as if I knew where it led. Once I was around a corner and out of sight, I stopped and sat down because I knew very well I wasn't going to find the cave by trailing through miles of passageway. Unfortunately, there was nothing to do but think.
What was I going to do?
I had lost Hurog. There was no way around the king's writ except for the king. And I had neither the wealth, even if Hurog's resources had still been mine, nor influence to sway the king. I was just a stupid boy who belonged in the king's asylum. This would never have happened to my father. He was a war hero. Oreg didn't bother walking back, but simply appeared a few paces away. He took off a money belt I hadn't noticed him wearing and handed it to me. I told Axiel I'd forgotten some things and I'd meet up with him later. Then I stopped by the study and took money out of the strongbox, some gold, but mostly silver and copper. I inspected coins and did some rapid calculations in my head. Taxes would be due after harvest. There were repairs to pay for as well, and hard coin wasn't easily come by. I hadn't even realized Hurog held as much coinage as the belt contained, though it was still far less than a bribe for the king would cost.
How much did you leave?
I put the belt around my waist.
Enough to do what is necessary. Your father had more than one strongbox. This one has been hidden since his death. Hurog is not as pitiful as he liked to pretend.
Ah,
I said for lack of a better response, thinking of all the things a little more gold would have done for Hirog. "What are your plans, my lord?" asked Orig. I started to speak when my thoughts, which had been lingering over my father and the substantial purse I held in my hand, gave me an idea. My father gave me one gift that might allow me to keep Hirog, Stala's teaching. I know how to lead, to plan battles, and Sifrin forbid when to retreat. I intend to be a war hero, like my father.
You have training, conceded Orig after an unflattering length of time, but you have no experience and no army, not to mention no war.
I laughed shortly. My whole life has been a battle. I have experience. If I can prove myself with a sword, it will go a long way to nullifying the king's writ. A 19-year-old idiot who is seldom at court is easily disposed of. A commander who has proved his worth in battle cannot be ignored. As for war, there is fighting going on in Arnstone with Vorsagian raiders. If it's not war yet, it will be soon. Orig looked at me as if I were stupid. It was something I was used to, but I didn't like it coming from him, especially when I wasn't playing dumb.
Commanders generally have armies, he commented, and heroes are usually dead men. Not coincidentally, dead heroes can't conspire against kings.
I grinned at his dry tone. Much more convenient for all concerned, I'm sure. But I have no intention of dying. With this much money, I patted the belt, I can hire 4 or 5 fighting men. And I have Axiel, enough for a start.
You have me too, Orig said. I asked Axiel to bring an extra horse.
What?
He had his face in the shadow, so I couldn't be certain of what I'd heard. Ornstone is halfway to hell from here.
I know, he said. I narrowed my gaze at him. I thought you were Hirog.
I am. He gave me a look that was half shy, half smug. But this body can go with you as long as you wear that ring. I can even work magic, just not as well.
Can you fight? I asked. A wizard would certainly be helpful.
Better than Ciara, not as well as you.
Yes, well, that leaves a lot of room, I said. He smiled slyly. Come on, then. If you're going to, let's see to the women and go meet Axiel.
Bastia, the former slave, and Ciara were waiting for us in the cave along with a small pile of goods. On top of the pile was my chainmail tunic. I'd grabbed my sword before leaving my room, but my hauberk had been tucked in a wardrobe. I was planning on asking Orig to retrieve it, but he'd anticipated my need. Orig, I said sincerely, I salute your competence. Ciara helped me into the heavy garment, and it settled over my shoulders like a familiar embrace. While I adjusted belts and sheaths, I explained about the writ in Garanon. When I was through, Ciara frowned at me. She tapped her forehead twice. Not so stupid, Ward, said the gesture.
No, I said. Do you want to come with us?
She grinned delightedly, and I decided not to tell her I was going to try to find a safe place to leave her until I actually found one. Each battle to its own day. My sister taken care of, I turned to the woman beside her.
Bastia, I'm sorry that I wasn't able to grant you freedom here, but I'll see to it that you don't go back into slavery.
She didn't react to what I'd just said, she just studied me.
The rabbit rocks were less than a half a mile from the keep, because I had to carry Bastia most of the way. She'd have preferred to walk, but she was too slow.
Penrod and Axiel waited with 8 horses behind the pale boulder that stuck up over the tops of the aspen grove surrounding them. 6 of the horses were saddled, and 2 more bore heavy packs. 6 with saddles, but there were only 5 of us.
Thought you might use an extra hand, Penrod said.
Penrod had fought in the guard, and he still trained under Stala every day with the rest of the stable hands. My father wanted everyone to be capable of defending Hirog. 3 fighting men and a wizard weren't a large force, but it was a good start. Penrod continued. My second will tell your uncle that you came to the stables with a strange woman in tow and took the best horses. When I protested, you ordered me to go along and care for them.
That way they won't tear down the keep looking for Bastia, observed Orig approvingly. He held out a hand to Penrod.
I'm Orig, a cousin of Ward's. He's been letting me hide here while I tried to decide what to do with myself. It seems I'm going to travel with you.
Admiring Orig's storytelling skills, I introduced Penrod to him, and then Bastia to Axiel and Penrod. The introductions were necessarily short.
We need to hurry, said Axiel. Stala thinks she can buy us time, but we want to get going.
We turned our attention to getting mounted,
For the first time, I realized Pansy was among the saddled horses. He snorted at me and shoved his nose in my chest. He wasn't a safe mount yet, but I was pleased to see him nonetheless. It was Feather's presence that surprised me.
You brought a mare with the stallion, Penrod? I asked. Feather twitched a lazy ear in my direction as Ciara scrambled atop her wide back. Ciara was the only one besides me who I allowed on Feather. Penrod chuckled as he checked the cinch on his own muscled gelding. He knows that saddle and bridle means work. He's traveled with mares before and knows his manners. Feather would have fretted if we left her behind. There's no one left here good enough to ride her. If we end up with a foal out of it, well enough. It took some sorting to get horses and people together. Aurig, for instance, had never ridden before, something that Penrod hadn't counted upon when he'd picked what horses to take. Finally, we changed the saddle to one of the pack animals, hybrid still, but with a calm manner, and Aurig settled on his back securely enough. Bestia could ride, thank the gods. There was no hiding the trail of so many, so I didn't bother to try. We needed distance more than secrecy.
Where are we going? Asked Penrod, riding by my side.
South, I answered. Turfanic first. If we ride at a good pace, we'll make it there by morning. I think I'll buy our passage on a freighter headed to a major port in Seaford. Newtonburn, maybe. Then we can continue to Orenstone and see what we meet up with. As we rode onward, I felt the steady lessening of the magic that impregnated Hirog. It was a dreary, depressing feeling, and I knew it would get worse before it got better. It always did when I left Hirog. I don't think that leaving Hirog had affected my father the same way. Perhaps because I was mageborn and he wasn't. But it made me feel like a drunkard deprived of his beer. After a while, I'd get used to it again. But it was always unpleasant, especially now when deep in my heart, I wasn't certain I'd ever come home again.
Did I hear you say Arenstone?
Asked Axiel, pushing forward to ride shoulder to shoulder with Penrod and me.
Why Arenstone?
There's a war brewing there, I said, and I think it might be my best chance to regain Hurog. You don't have to join me. To my surprise, Axiel, my father's man who'd been in countless battles at my father's side, didn't say any of the things that Aurig had rightfully mentioned about the foolhardiness of my scheme. Instead, he grinned, whitely in the darkness.
I'd be honored to accompany you, my lord.
If we're going to Arenstone, said Penrod, shouldn't we get passage to some place farther south than Newtonburn? The road from Newtonburn to Arenstone goes over several mountain passes, and it will be late fall by the time we get there. I've done it once, and I'll be honest, my lord, I'd not care to do that again. I used the conversation to distract myself from the growing discomfort as we got farther from Hirog. I hadn't actually planned on traveling by sea at all. We'll buy passage, and let Garanon chase the ship while we travel by road through Talvin to the capital at Estion, and from there, Arenstone is a straight shot south.
Chapter 5. Wardwick. I don't know that running was the right thing to do. People died who might not have if I'd stayed. People I loved, but it seemed the only option at the time. What had appeared rational and adventurous in the dark of night seemed a lot stupider in the morning light. But no better plan presented itself. As we came down out of the foothills, Terfanig lay ahead of us. The scattered buildings touched by the pink light of dawn were as familiar to me as Hirog's scarred walls. I turned to Aurig, who was riding beside me, and murmured, "Can you tell what's going on at Hirog from here?"
"From anywhere," he said. His body relaxed and his gaze grew far away. "You've been discovered. Garanon is saddling horses in the stable."
"Thank you." Terfenig was 4 hours' ride at top speed. We'd taken nearer to 5. I wanted us to be at least an hour out of Terfenig when Garanon arrived. "Penrod," I called. When he approached, I said, "I'd like you and Axiel to buy what supplies we don't have. I'll get a room in an inn for Bestia to rest in and leave Aurig and Ciara there for protection while I go on a few errands of my own."
"Right," he said. "I'll tell Axiel." When Penrod had ridden off, Aurig asked, "May I come with you?" I wanted no company, but something in his voice made me ask, "What's wrong?" Instead of refusing outright, "I cannot be too far from you when I am away from Hirog."
"What do you mean?"
"Unpleasantness for me," he said with a brief apologetic smile. "Not much for you."
"How far is too far?" I asked. "My business is no more than a mile from the inn. Is that close enough?"
He stared at the tips of his horse's ears for a moment, then said with clear reluctance, "It should be all right."
Since Newtonburn was the next major port on the coast, I didn't have much trouble finding a ship going there.
A ship that was leaving before the pursuit from Hurog that would make it to Terfanig was more difficult. At least I found that the Cormorant was sailing with the tide, and I had to scurry to find her clerk before he left their official list of passengers at the ship's office. I paid for our passage, as he warned me that the captain wouldn't wait for late passengers. I assured him that there would be no trouble. If we missed it, we would catch the next one. The clerk thought me a rich fool, which bothered me not at all. Ward of Hurog's name and 7 silver each for 6 passages went down upon the lambskin list. Easy for Garanon to find. From the docks, I strode to the south side of town. The streets were a little more unkempt, the buildings smaller. I passed 3 taverns, several chandleries, and a smithy before turning into a cooper's shop briefly. I backtracked to a scruffy little tavern with a sign proclaiming it the Horned Lord. The name was either blasphemous, the horned god was a reviled figure from ancient times, or audacious. A horned lord could be a lord whose wife slept with other men. Either way, it was sure to appeal to sailors. As could be expected at this hour of the day, no one was in the tavern when I entered except a ragtag minstrel too involved with the tune he was fingering on an old harp to pay attention to me. I found a clean mug on a shelf just inside the kitchen door and helped myself to ale from an open barrel. Taking a seat, I listened to the music. The harper was better than I expected, given his youth, though he would have done well to replace the old harp with something better crafted. "The owner will expect payment for that ale," said the minstrel at length, brushing pale gold hair out of his eyes. "I have a few coppers," I replied. "I heard that the Hurog Meaton died." He played a few sorrow-laden notes as he watched me. I nodded and sipped the beer. "I didn't think you'd want to come to the funeral." He didn't say anything. At last I set down my empty mug. "I thought to find you working wood at the cooper's, Tostin, rather than playing tunes for a rabble lot of sailors." My brother's chin came up defensively. "I've no talent for wood, but I can play the harp. May not be real work," I broke in. "Real enough with your skill. Don't confuse me with father. Music probably pays better than being a cooper's apprentice." He looked away, so I guess it didn't. I cleared my throat. "The reason I left you with the cooper had more to do with your safety than your talents. A handsome lad like you has to be careful around sailors." He stiffened, understanding what I meant, which he wouldn't have when I left him in Terfanic. "You're the new Hurog Meaton." He changed the subject abruptly. I couldn't tell what he was thinking. Tostin had always been a secretive person. I don't believe he ever liked me much. My loud, good-natured idiot self had made him uncomfortable, like a noisy dog and a hot-bred horse. My father's rages and beatings, though Tostin experienced them less often than I did, had been worse for him. He'd fought and fought to be what father wanted, not seeing that father would never be satisfied. "No, I'm not the Hurog Meaton." I stopped to consider it. Actually, I didn't know what the king's writ did with the title. At least I don't hold Hurog right now. I'd gotten his interest.
"Why not?"
"It seems our father decided to declare me unfit, and politics have lent him posthumous aid. Unless our uncle decides to get greedy, Hurog belongs to you."
There was a long silence that stretched until the back of my neck tightened with tension. If he wanted Hurog, it was his. I didn't think he would, but he might. He was my brother. I would not fight him for it. Tostin stared through the dark wall of the tavern, as his fingers, long and graceful like Orog's, flexed on the table.
"How?" His voice cracked, as if his mouth were dry. "After me, you are our father's heir," I said.
"I know that," he said impatiently, "but no one knows where I am except you. I mean, how are you going to do it?"
I frowned at him. His voice laid some significance on the last 2 words.
"Do what?"
He snorted.
"You don't think I could watch you and father spar all these years?"
He sounded as if he were several decades older than he was,
"without knowing what Hurog meant to you? After you got me out, I thought about why you'd pretend to be stupid when you weren't, and I realized that you were intent on annihilating anything that got between you and Hurog. Father destroying his children, you destroying him."
He set the harp aside and stood up to face me.
"So you have me here alone now. You'd better hurry, though. The tavern owner will be back soon. He's gone to get another keg of beer."
I stared at him, feeling as stupid as I'd pretended to be. I had not a clue what he was talking about.
Why should I care that the owner was coming back?
Look, I said, I have to leave here one way or the other, or else I'll end up in the King's Asylum for unwanted nobles and embarrassing relatives. If you want to go to Estien and train at the Minstrel Hall there, I can give you money. The Cooper knows people. He can find an escort for you. If you want Hurog, well, I think Durog's all right, but you might keep close to Stala for a while. I'll send Penrod back with you, too, and Orig if I could manage it. Maybe Axiel as well. If he wanted Hurog, I wouldn't need an army. I looked around.
I don't want to leave you here, though. It's not safe. If you can think of anywhere else you'd like to go.
I stopped mid-sentence as I suddenly understood what he thought I was here to do.
You think I'm here to kill you.
I was stupid for it to take me so long. The thought that I could kill my brother was so far from the truth that it had never occurred to me he might believe it.
Tostin, watching my face, flinched.
I'm sorry, he whispered. His hand moved as if he would reach out, but he jerked it back and wrapped it around his harp so hard it must have hurt.
I felt lightheaded at the sudden insight into how he saw me. Battling for Hurog, so caught up in the struggle that father's death was merely the final punctuation.
If you died, the king would just claim Hurog for the throne, I said. Stepping back, I needed some place to curl up and nurse my wounds. I needed to sleep away the nagging fatigue that reminded me I wasn't on Hurog soil. I needed to leave here.
You left the Coopers because you thought he was my man, I said, knowing that was part of the truth, though Tostin had always loved music.
Well enough. As long as you bring in money, the tavern owner should protect you from harm. To my surprise, my voice sounded just as it always had. I took out the heavy bag of coins that Orig had given me and divided its contents in half. I took one pile and slid it back into the purse. There wasn't enough left to hire a band of mercenaries, but I'd find some other way. Half would be enough to pay Tostin's way through whatever school or service he wanted. He said my name as I walked out the door. I met up with the others at the inn. They were ready to leave, and it wasn't long before Terfanig was behind us. We didn't dare take the main highway to Estien. We might run into Garanon by accident, so we traveled the rougher tracks. We rode through the day and stopped before it got too dark to see. Stala's admonitions about knowing the men fighting for you ringing in my ears. I assigned Bastia with me to the first watch. She was still so tired she was drooping, but I was still fresh enough to stay awake until Penrod relieved us. There was a knoll just above the camp, and I motioned Bastia to follow me as the others were laying themselves down to sleep. She limped, but it didn't seem to slow her much. When I sat on a fallen log, she folded her arms and leaned against the tree. Though I couldn't see her clearly in the shadows of the evening, I'd watched her as we rode today, my eye drawn to the flawless beauty of her profile. Orig had managed a bath for her and clean, her dark hair glinted with red highlights. She was older than I, perhaps a few years older than Mother even, but I doubted she'd seen her 40th year. So, I said, tell me about yourself.
What do you want to know?
I smiled. We may not have slaves at Hurog, but I've been to court. Slaves don't act like you. Slaves are meek and quiet. A slave wouldn't, for instance, have tried to hide how much I was hurting her when I cleaned her feet, because slaves know that making light of pain just invites more of it.
Tell me who you are, and why Black Cyrnok would want you so badly.
She was silent.
She's a mage, my lord, said Orig.
It was difficult to see him in the dark. I hadn't heard him approach.
So much I did know, I said.
Bastia had looked around when he'd spoken, so I knew that he hadn't been using his trick of being unseen and unheard by anyone except me.
I am a slave, whatever you believe, she said finally, and I'm not a very good mage, but I am the only slave Cyrnok has who is also mageborn. He finds me useful.
She gestured, and a cold white flame appeared in her hand. She held it up and stared into my face for a long moment. Her complexion was pale, but that might have been because of the brilliance of the light she'd called. Her eyes were glittered with stress. I don't know what she was looking for in my expression, nor if she found it before she extinguished the light.
I see, I said.
Where did he get you? Avenhell?
Her accent sounded Western, all soft consonants.
She hesitated, then nodded. From the Cholite Refuge.
You were sworn to Chol?
The patron goddess of Avenhel demanded mages to serve her in temples, slaves in truth, but not ordinary slaves. For the first time, I believed her claims.
How did he get you out? I asked.
The Cholites were very well defended. I could hear the bitter smile in her voice.
My life was dearly bought. I understand the Cholin was in need of wealth to gain more power with the High King.
She sold you to him. Bastia inclined her head.
You are free to go where you will, you know. We're about as far from Avenhel as we can get and still be in the Five Kingdoms, but I can pay for an escort home. And not much more if the rest of us were going to make it to Orenstone.
She shook her head. My family sold me to the Cholin, my lord. They would be obliged to return me, and the Cholin would simply send me back to the man she sold me to in the first place. I have no place to go. If you take me with you, I'll make myself useful.
She lowered her head and shifted against the tree.
How did you know about Hurog? Asked Orog suddenly. Hurog has not been a refuge for runaway slaves for a very long time. If you'd arrived a few months earlier, my lord's father would have had you returned to your owner immediately.
She laughed without amusement. Sirnak has a slave boy whose job it is to keep the fire burning in the room where the men drink. He told me that once a great lord came in and told stories about a fabled keep called Hurog. He must have listened very hard, for the boy knew three or four stories by heart.
I laughed, feeling even more stupid.
No, he probably heard them any number of times. Last time I went to court, I went to Sirnak's place several times and told those stories over and over to anyone with the misfortune to be in my company. I'd been trying to help a friend out of Sirnak's clutches. I'd failed.
So it had been my stories that caused Bastia to come to Hurog. Even that straw in my downfall had been my own doing. I rubbed my face.
You are certain you want to stay with us? If you come, you're likely to find yourself in the middle of a full-scale war in Orenstone.
Better with you, my lord, than outselling myself in the streets.
Ah, then, I said with casual cheerfulness, you'll just have to hire on with a mercenary band.
I leaned closer to her and purred,
for you know, 'tis an ill-prepared mercenary who doesn't have his own mage to counter the magics sent against him.
There was a little silence. Then she said,
How do you do that? One minute a stupid lout, the next a lord, and an instant later a
Davaean Caret at your service. I bowed with more flourish than grace.
Oryk snickered suddenly. I'd forgotten about him. He was a mercenary who came to train with the Blue Guard a few years ago, he explained to Bastia. Thought an awful lot of himself, and he left the day after Stala. Ward's aunt wiped the dirt with his face. Couldn't stomach being beaten by a woman. You play him better than he did himself.
I bowed shallowly to acknowledge the compliment. Even Orog didn't see the whole truth. Everyone I portrayed, including the Lord, was an act as well. He was gleaned from stories of Selig and from Selig's journals hidden in the library. I hadn't been a real person since I was 12.
A younger son, I said out loud. Too many people have met Tavain.
What? Asked Bastia.
I can't be ward of Hurog. He's too likely to get sent to Estien, huh?
Everyone knows he's an idiot who belongs in the king's asylum. I think I'll be a younger son in disgrace and trying to restore his good name. I took horses and money from my home when I escaped in the night with my faithful retainer. Now, let's see. Should that be Axiel or Penrod? Penrod, I believe. He has that old retainer air about him. And my squire, Ciara, whom we shall call Ciar, because it's safer for her to be a boy. Axiel will be a man we met upon the road, destitute, a fighter whose master died due to illness. The Scourge. Orog will be my cousin or bastard half-brother or something.
Is he? Asked Bastia, sounding faintly intrigued.
Drawn back from my tale-telling, I frowned.
Yes, but he doesn't like to talk about it.
I don't? Asked Orog, raising an eyebrow.
No, I replied firmly.
What about me? Asked Bastia, leaning forward.
She's the cause of your disgrace? Offered Orog.
No, I shook my head, too melodramatic. I think we hired you a Terfanig, an Avenhel-born wizard stranded at a northern seaport.
Rescued from a shipwreck, she offered enthusiastically. Stranded too far from home to